I now know what it was like for Bruce Willis in The Sixth Sense, because I was having an entire conversation with you and producer Matt while my mic wasn't on, and it seemed like you guys were responding to me.
No, not at all.
What do we have here in the background, by the way?
I believe it's the Craig McTavish press conference we're going to play right now.
Are we? Because I think Matty just had Tim and Sid up, and he's editing the press conference right now, so we can actually play some of it back. If you miss the, if you miss Craig McTavish channeling his inner Macbeth, Lady Macbeth specifically for you Shakespearean scholars, out damn spot. We'll play that back for you here in a couple of seconds.
Yeah, I was we were having an entire conversation about the press conference, and I thought that you guys were responding to me, but it turns out you were just responding to each other. And yet I felt like I was somehow in the conversation.
Yeah, you're just saying to yourself, man, you guys are idiots.
And then I found out. At the end, I'm a ghost. So McTavish presser. Obviously, it's a Monday. It's a week of it's a day of the week that ends in day. So there's a McTavish presser. Dallas Eakins fired today by the Edmonton Oilers because who knows? It just seemed like last week. In fact,
10 days. Come on.
10 days when Craig McTavish kind of indicated in a roundabout way that he didn't see any need in firing the coach.
Not really in a roundabout way. He said there'll be no coaching change. I don't think there was anything roundabout about it. Roundabout was how he didn't want to talk about trading core players today, which in a way leads you to believe he's going to trade a core player. But and probably should.
So it's just opposite day all the time with him now?
Maybe.
He's like a bridge troll telling riddles, whatever the opposite is. But here's the thing, though. It's like, it's one thing to say that you're not going to fire the coach, and another thing to say that you're not firing the coach for a very specific reason, which is that you felt like this franchise had too many coaches fired. Assistant coaches, co-coaches, old coaches that were bought in, now head coaches. Like that was his reasoning, was you don't get rid of the head coach because you need stability. So maybe his rationale here is, well, I'm the general manager. They all know me. I'm stable. And Todd Nelson, he coached many of them in the American Hockey League. He's stable too. It's not coaching change. It's old friends coming over for dinner.
It was, and you'll hear this in a second when we roll back to press conference. I believe Matty has it standing by. But the reason for firing the coach was a weird one. He started off the presser by saying that Dallas Eakins was an excellent coach and had, wait for it, no real good reason to do this other than performance. Huh? Like they were somehow different than they were 10 days ago? Let's roll the press conference. You can judge for yourself, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about it. How about that for a little podcast today? What do you think, Wish?
People always love when we Mystery Science Theater, these podcasts, this press conference, so let's do it.
All right, let's do it. Let's do it.
Craig McTavish, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, I'm going to start with just a couple preliminary comments. We made a coaching change. I think that's obvious by now. I'd like to thank Dallas and Ingrid for their commitment to the Edmonton Oilers and the city of Edmonton and the time that they've been here.
Well, he chose them.
I really feel the same way now as I did when I hired him. He's an excellent coach. I was happy with a lot of things. I had no real good reason to do this outside of performance, and that's
there it is.
That's really the bottom line that we're all judged by, is the performance level of the hockey club and certainly the record. And I would point to those things solely as the reason for this change.
But then how are they different from 10 days ago?
Coaching duties,
still the same
team,
still the same performance.
Todd Nelson is going to come up from... they're flying into Charlotte today, so Todd will fly into Phoenix tomorrow.
And Todd Nelson has a lot of NHL coaching experience, right?
Like
he's
been
assistant coach of the Thrashers for a couple of years.
I know the personnel well.
So another guy with no NHL coaching experience.
I want to be clear in my messaging to the players.
The season's gone.
Get into the trenches. I think
They just need someone to stand in there and take bullets for a few months.
Actually,
take bullets for 50 games.
Then I will transition.
Like that's the thing we forget about this. There's still a lot of hockey to be played here.
Todd will remain.
This isn't like you cleaning up a couple of innings. It's 50 games.
This is long long relief duty.
Jerry's going to take over in OKC. I'm not going to put a timeline on my contribution to the coaching staff. I'll leave at a reasonable time when I think Todd's completely familiar with the group and with the players.
I give it five games, over under.
Terrific
wish.
Job.
I'll take the
minor league
over.
Team in the American.
Really?
Hockey.
I would take the under. All right.
I say they go 4-1 and McTavish stays on because he believes he can be the savior.
Give myself a chance to get my hands on it.
I think they go 0-3 and he punts, but we'll see.
Craig, in the past you stated publicly you don't want to dig into your core players, your young guys you're trying to build around. You just said here you've made a lot of changes and none of them have had traction. Are you more willing today to dig into that group than you were yesterday?
Well, that's something that I don't want to get into at this point. I don't want to answer that question until I get a hands-on understanding of exactly what's
happening. Someone's going.
Oh, yeah.
I've got a pretty hands-on good
understanding
of that, but I want to have ample opportunity to have eyeball-to-eyeball conversations with the core group that we have in hopes that we can move this thing forward before I'm willing to do anything.
You haven't been doing that! You've been the GM for 18 months! 18 months you've been the GM! You've not had these conversations? What are you going to learn in practice? Here's what you're going to learn. The same thing we all learn, that when the big boss is in the office, you know what you do? You don't F off! You don't screw up! You put away your toys. You don't surf the web for the entire day. You work. That's what you do when the boss is there. What are you going to learn? What are you going to learn in those practices? Oh, look, he's hauling ass. He's clearly not the problem. That's because you're standing there.
Craig,
what are you going to learn?
Craig McTavish knows exactly who. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Jordan Eberle, Taylor Hall, Justin Schultz, David Perron, all these. He knows exactly who they are. That is just a stalling technique. Oh, I need to have a look under the hood here. I need to get a closer look and see what these players are all about. He knows what these players are all about.
He knows.
But he's not going to come right out and say, yeah, we're moving Hall.
No, but he's got the basic problem with the organization right now, is that the minute you move somebody from the core, the indication is that the core is rotten. The indication is that this team doesn't work on a very basic team-building level. And now you got to do the whole thing over again. You have to hit the reset button.
Here's the thing. The core is bad. The core is terrible right now. The core is awful. And I know the knee-jerk reaction, the easy way to assess it is, well, they're a bunch of bad kids. And, you know, there are some people who think that these guys are a bunch of bad kids, and they're whiny, and they're spoiled, and they haven't done anything, and they all have $6 million contracts, and they walk around like they've won the Stanley Cup when none of them have found the postseason in the NHL. But who have they been around? This comes back to the question we asked, you know, after the last Craig McTavish press conference. There's that group. There's that five-year black hole on this roster of players that should be leading this team. It should never have been Taylor Hall, Jordan Eberle, and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins' team at their age. That is ridiculous.
What's the old thing that you say about teams? What's the easiest thing to market if you're a team?
Oh, you can either market wins or hope.
Right. They can't even market hope.
Nope.
They can't.
Not right
like,
now.
If you start dealing away the core,
you're basically
saying that the hope that we sold you isn't working out.
You can sell the hope at the end of the year at the draft. That's when you can sell the hope. But right now they can't sell the hope. Because they can't keep back and say, wait till these guys mature. Wait till these kids are ready. Wait till these kids are NHL battle worn. No. Now the mantra should be, how do we protect these kids? And the first thing should be get Leon Draisaitl off this roster. Send him back to the Western Hockey League. I don't care if you burned a year off his ELC. It does not matter. You have a young hockey player who doesn't need to be in this mess. Don't allow him to stay in this mess. And make no mistake about it, this is going to be a messy rest of the year. It's been terrible so far. It's about to get worse. Like I said, there's 50 games still to go for the Oilers.
There's a real disconnect here for me between the things that McTavish said today and the things that he said on December 4th or 5th. I forget what day it was. There's a real disconnect here, okay? Because 10 days ago, we were talking about how it's the player's responsibility. It's about accountability. It's about the players accounting for themselves, about how a coaching change doesn't matter, about how stability behind the bench would be a better thing than firing the coach now, because firing the coach now does nothing. It's all about the players, the players, the players. Well, give the players a chance to grow with the coach. If that's what you think, then that's the way it should go. And he even said that the players had Aikens' back, and a lot of them had come forward and had his back publicly.
Mm-hmm.
So if your whole point is that you want accountability from the players, you want the players to learn how to win and grow into winners, and the problem, one of the problems with them not being winners is a problem with stability. Then what the hell are you doing?
I think it went like this. There is a volcano in Edmonton, and that volcano is very mad and about to erupt. And that volcano, in order so it does not erupt, demanded a virgin. That volcano wanted a sacrifice, wanted someone to walk up the mountain with someone in his hands and drop him into the volcano as a sacrifice to this volcano in Edmonton so they would not explode. And after yesterday's performance against the New York Rangers, where you saw Henrik Lundqvist laughing after the game at how easy it was and how it's nice to have an easy game every now and then because they've been involved in some hard ones, a Ranger team coming off a game the night before against the Vancouver Canucks who should have been pressed, let's just say, a little bit harder than the Edmonton Oilers pressed them. It's tough. And, by the way, attention, people in Florida who are consistently mocked for fans not showing up to your games. Did you see some of the empty seats, the fans dressed as empty seats last night, Greg? Around Edmonton? Yeah. For that game? Like, it's getting nasty. It's getting real nasty in Edmonton. And there needed to be a sacrifice. But here's what I think the problem is.
What's that?
I don't think that that's the right sacrifice.
No, it's not.
That isn't the right sacrifice. The right sacrifice should be one of the boys on the bus.
Well,
one of those guys that here, guy. Look, fans. We fired the coach. Look, guys. We fired the coach. Look, this is gonna calm you down, right? No. If you're an Oilers fan listening right now, shoot me in a tweet. Does this calm you down? Does this make you feel better? You think the right thing was done here for the future of this organization? Let's see. McTavish, Quinn, Rennie, Kruger. Akins, now back to Mac T, and then Todd Nelson. How many more are you going to go through? How many more? How many more coaches are you going to serve up?
How do you feel about Akins as a coach?
I'm only gauging him from what I saw with the Marlies and the brief, scant time he had with an Edmonton Oilers roster that, I'm sorry, whether you're Scotty Bowman or Toe Blake, you're not going to really do much with that roster. I still think that Dallas Akins is a good coach. Were there some missteps? Yep. Were there some things he should have not said publicly? Absolutely. Should he not have said that stop thinking about us as a young team, start judging us now, the team needs to stand up on our own 2 feet? Yeah. I saw how he coached with the Marlies. I worked plenty of those games. I got to sit in the coach's office a number of times and heard Dallas Akins talk about hockey and talk about teams and talk about deployment of players and how to win hockey games. I believe that Dallas Akins is a good coach. Did he show that in Edmonton? No. For a number of reasons. One, the roster he was given.
Yeah, no, that's true. I was going to say, I think that there is a certain argument to be made that tactically he wasn't successful in Edmonton, tactfully he wasn't successful in Edmonton, and that there is a sense now about Dallas Akins because of this lack of success in Edmonton that maybe he is a product of being a guy who talks an amazing game, mm-hmm. had the backing of the Toronto media machine because he was the boy genius with the Marlies.
But hang on a second.
He's not as good a coach as was being sold.
Pause on 1 second there. That wasn't the media fabrication in Toronto when it came to the Oilers, because he was on his way to the Vancouver gig. Let's not forget, right? He was on his way to
Vancouver.
He was on his way to
Vancouver. Oh, others bought into it.
It was the Oilers organization that was blown away by the interview. Like, honestly, he's a smart guy. Like, however you feel, if you're an Oilers fan, you probably don't want to hear this because look what's happened to your team in the past couple of years. But Dallas Akins is a really smart hockey man. I think the Oilers' problems are more about composition than they are about coaching. I can say
I
that more about,
that.
About the Oilers than any other team in the NHL. Look at that Swiss cheese defense. Who's the number one defenseman in Edmonton? I'll wait. Who's the number one goaltender in Edmonton? I'll wait.
Well, that's just because they haven't really determined. I mean, it's an ongoing competition between Scrivens and Fast.
How many times can Ben Scrivens get run before anyone does anything about it, by the way? Two games in a row gets plowed? Nothing.
The thing that I will say, listen, I wasn't a huge Akins fan in Edmonton, and I think he would have been gone at the end of the season anyway. But I think I had a problem with the fact that team had no discernible style or personality. What was it? When you played Edmonton, what was it? I mean, outside of being a team that would fold at the, you know, turn tail and run at the first sight of adversity, like, what was the personality of this Edmonton team? They didn't have one.
They were soft. You could bully the kids.
Yeah. Okay. And the other problem I have, and I know that this is not necessarily on him because the player is problematic, but could you F up the Yakupov thing anymore? Could you F it up any more than he effed it up?
Then who effed it up? The Dallas Eakins effed it up?
It was
the Edmonton Oilers effed it up by taking them in the first place.
Eakins is part of that problem. The way that this thing was handled publicly, the point where it became sparring between player and coach, and again, as we talked about when Yakupov was being used as the example of all things wrong at Edmonton, I mean, it was the Russian punching bag thing. Let's be honest here. It was the Russian punching bag thing. Let's all talk about how defensively irresponsible and soft the Russian is. But the good Canadian boys that played in junior, no, off limits.
You know when that started? That started when Neil Yakupov decided after a couple of laps he was done with his first bag skate, and he left the ice.
I'm not saying the player
tell me,
wasn't
tell me, problematic. Tell me who does that. Tell me who does that.
As I said at the time, you go a long way towards trying to improve accountability on this team if you take down one of the golden boys and not the Russian kid.
100%. Right. And who's the only golden boy they ever went after? Justin Schultz.
Right.
But did they ever go after Eberle?
Nugent Hopkins had a face-off winning percentage of 0.01. They never said anything about him.
Well,
I know.
And the funny thing is now, if you ask a lot of people around that organization, when it comes to almost like near untouchables on that team, Hopkins is above Hall. Make no mistake about it. Nugent Hopkins is above Hall right now.
That's positional though, isn't it?
I mean, 100%, but still, Hopkins is above Hall. I'm just telling you from people that I talked to on the weekend.
The Oilers is above all. Like 100%. You think about where this team is going this season. You think about the fact that they could be one lucky bounce of a lottery ball away from having Nugent Hopkins, Connor McDavid, or Eichel, and Draisaitl as their three centers going forward. And honestly, if all those kids develop the way they're supposed to, that's as good as anything in the Western Conference.
Don't rush them into the NHL.
I mean?
Don't rush them into the NHL. Like I know.
Talent is tantalizing. Hope is tantalizing. I can see the hesitation in not wanting to pull the trigger on Eberle or Nugent Hopkins. I don't think Hall's going anywhere. I think Hall's a legit star, and I think you build the team around Taylor Hall.
I don't know.
Is he the Canadian Ovechkin?
I never heard a phrase like that before. Is he the Canadian Ovechkin?
Is he someone who on left wing puts up amazing stats, but for whatever reason can't be a leader? You can tell me, Jeff Merrick.
I just think that the Oilers know that they need to get a big return for moving one of their core guys, and they'll get a bigger return for Hall than
the biggest return for Hall, by far.
I think you get the biggest return for Ryan Nugent Hopkins. You know how hard it is to get a first-line center?
Depends. Is he a first-line center?
That's another great question. He's on his way.
Let's see. He weighs 90 pounds and can't win a face. Yes. Yes, he should be. Put him right above Kopitar right now.
Yeah. I'll say I think McTavish, when he was asked about training those core players, I think the reason he sort of tap danced that thing was he didn't want to come out flat out and say, yeah, we're moving one or two of these guys.
Jeremy Ballaston is Yakupov's this generation's dig. Oof. You know, the thing about Yak that's interesting is like, I remember when he was drafted, it was almost like, well, you have to draft him. I mean, he's clearly the best offensive talent in the draft. But I don't remember anybody saying, sure thing, can't miss, can't, you know,
catch
his name on the glass in the Hockey Hall of Fame. There was sort of just like this de facto number one thing, but at no point did I think he had the can't miss hype of a Stamkos or at that point in his career a Daig.
100%. Daig was supposed to be can't miss. Although anyone that followed the game closely would have told you, hey man, Pronger's a better player. And the 1-2 should have been the other way around. But the way that Ottawa was sold on the offense and the relatively local boy, et cetera, they need to put butts in the seats for the new franchise. The thing about Yakupov was it was a two-person race at that point. It was Yakupov and it was Ryan Murray.
Right.
And that was it. Alexander Galchenyuk that year played, I want to say, only a handful of games, regular season, maybe even as low as three, and then played a handful of playoff games, and once again, Sarnia flamed out in the first round because Sarnia always flames out in the first round. Thank you very much. I've only once made it through the second. And, you know, Morgan Riley was injured as well. Griffin Reinhart, who was in, you know, Edmonton's backyard, wasn't being touted anywhere close to being the number one overall pick. It was Ryan Murray and Nail Yakupov.
The two highest ranked North American skaters were Yakupov, then Murray, then Grigorenko, then Galchenyuk, then Riley. And then for the European skaters, it was Philip Forsberg and Teräväinen were the top two. Just to remind everybody of the top 10 of that draft, this is 2012. We should start seeing some of the names now in this draft, yes?
Oh, yeah.
Yakupov, Ryan Murray, Alex Galchenyuk, Griffin Reinhart, Morgan Riley, Hampus Lindholm, Matthew Dumba, Derek Pouliot, Jacob Trouba, and Slater...
Cuckoo. Ooh,
Cuckoo.
Slater Cuckoo.
Oh, that's right, Cuckoo, yeah. That's
yeah,
right.
He's
and then Forsberg, then Grigorenko. In that top 10 right now, you'd have to say that Trouba's the best player, right?
I do love Trouba, but very quietly. Have a look at what Hampus Lindholm has done.
Lindholm, I agree, is there.
Habs fans will tell you that ultimately Alexander Galchenyuk may end up being the best.
And Penguins fans will say that overall Derek Pouliot will end up being the best.
Even though he hasn't played a single game in the NHL. but his junior coach in Portland is there behind the bench. He's going to be great.
I thought Galchenyuk was a very special player. And I thought that the Oilers would have done themselves well to trade down to get him. Trade off the top pick with somebody to get him. But
you know, funny, the two best players you could make the argument in that draft were drafted number 22 and number 30.
22 was Olli Maatta.
30 was Tanner Pearson. That's after going through the draft once too.
This could easily be one of those drafts where everybody who went after the top 10 could be. I mean, Forsberg, right? Gergensen's. I mean, obviously an all-star. Tom Wilson could eventually be a player, maybe if he can stay healthy. Hurdle, Teräväinen, Maatta,
Vasilevskiy's
Malcolm Subban.
Vasilevskiy's a nice goaltender.
Yep,
he really
yep.
is.
Malcolm Subban, and then
how good has Malcolm Subban been in Providence this year? He's been fantastic.
Yeah. And Tanner Pearson.
And now, what's the thing about Tanner Pearson? And I know it's apples and oranges, chalk and cheese, and all that, but he joined an organization where he didn't have to be the guy. Right? Tanner Pearson, Tyler Toffoli didn't have to be the guy.
Right.
There were players in the late 20s that were that team, and it allowed players like Toffoli and Pearson to grow into those roles.
Right. Well, also helps when you get to skate with Jeff Carter.
Yeah, that's of course that helps too. But I mean, compare that to what the Oilers have. And this is why I keep coming back. Man, listen, there's still more pain for the Tambellini years coming up. It's true. It's still coming.
Let's talk about that, actually. A very important thing happened in that press conference. Maddie, do we have any more of that press conference or no? Oh, okay. Well, another thing that he said in that press conference quite infamously is that he has blood on his hands, meaning McTavish, which is a complete 180 from the forensic investigation that was executed by the franchise in which McTavish found out that everyone who came before him and after him was responsible for the Oilers' demise except for him. So today we got a very clear, a very emphatic Craig McTavish saying, I have blood on my hands. This roster is what I put together. I'm as responsible for this as anybody, which is a refreshing change, but one that I believe was probably communicated to him behind closed doors by his superior, who he threw under the bus for having made this mess over the last decade. When McTavish said, no, I was just the coach for 8 years. How could I possibly have anything to do with player personnel?
He had to. He just fired someone. He had to come up with something because he can't just say, well, you know what? Too bad. My job, I've been excellent at my job, but this guy.
Well, you're right. I mean,
he's got it. He has to take a little bit of this on himself.
No, because essentially he just fired somebody he hired, right?
100%.
So I mean, he had to say that this is his responsibility because it's the first move, one of the first moves he made that now has come back to bite him in the ass. Still waiting for those massive changes, by the way. Remember when McTavish was hired and we were all like, he's saying there's going to be earth-shaking changes. Oh, bye, Sam Gagne. Oh, did you feel the earth move? It was like being during the San Francisco Quake during the World Series. That's how much the earth moved with the jettisoning of Sam Gagne from the roster. That was
there
the big move.
A lot of missteps early. Missteps by Dallas Higgins by saying, don't call us a young team. There was Craig McTavish talking about sweeping changes in the organization. I get that when you first take a job, you want to set your expectations and your goals really high. probably a good idea to keep those secret. Probably a good idea to keep those closer to the vest. Stop saying anything, it's going to bite you later.
On Yak, Stephen B. King writes in, he's this generation Sergei Samsonov. I don't think he's shown the offense, the offensive consistency of Sergei Samsonov.
Sergei Samsonov's a pretty good player.
He was a pretty good player, but it's like when you say that a player hasn't shown the offensive consistency of Sergei, it's a contract year. Here's 60 points. Samsonov, there's a problem with that. Adrian writes in, wait, why not just say we're trading one or two of them? The kids haven't earned the security. Why keep them comfy? I agree. That's a real baffler for me, too. Like, why are we so protectionist of the, like, if you want guys to be accountable, if you want them to mature, if you want them to play better and be better all around, like, isn't the fear of God, isn't the fear of, oh, guess what? All your friends, all your boys, all the comfort that you have here, it's going to be gone in a millisecond. Like,
hang on,
why
hang
not
on.
Just let them know that? Why not just come out and say today, I'm firing our coach and we're open for business. No one's safe.
You think, hang on a second. Let me ask you this, and I'm not saying this tongue in cheek. Do you think that's really a threat? Honestly,
it is a threat for anybody to be uprooted from their comfort zone.
Hang on, what's that, Matty? Specs calling us back? Okay.
Oh, okay. Let's listen to more, Craig.
I was going to make a point. But yeah, go ahead. We'll put more.
No, your point is they want to get off the sinking ship. It's like threatening somebody in Buffalo.
Isn't this the next shoe to fall? Like, isn't this the next one to drop? Like, okay, which kid has to be, you know, removed from the situation now? Which is the first kid to ask for the trade? Because, man, honestly, like, if you're one of these kids' agents and you look at the immediate future of this organization and you say, man, my kid's like 24 here, you don't want out?
Wait,
really?
Are you saying that there may come a point in which the Edmonton Oilers trade off their better players?
Because they've asked for a trade?
This is weird. It's never happened in franchise history.
It's not supposed to happen in the salary cap world, right? Couldn't you see it happening? Anyway, let's get back to some
more. Are any of them going to be in love with a dancer actress from Los Angeles by chance?
No, that only happens once. That only happens once. And by the way, we should talk about Vegas at some point today with all the stuff with William Foley. But yeah, more Edmonton stuff here. More
Vegas,
Edmonton, more Edmonton.
Baby.
Compounding of the losses that led me to this decision.
When you coach, Craig, your team's had a reputation of at least working hard. You maybe have some skills, but you have a strong enough work ethic. Does this group have a strong enough work ethic?
Well, we'll see. I mean, for me as a coach, the core principles have always been execution, competitiveness, and hard work.
And
I mentioned those three core pillars of performance,
and those weren't
Eakins'
teams.
And,
I mean, like, let's be honest,
it's not
here.
Going to be a compliment.
They weren't.
They didn't have. They didn't work hard.
Todd or I.
They didn't.
About what the expectation.
Why don't you
is
think they
group.
Worked hard?
We've got to
because Craig McTavish wasn't their coach.
To those
obviously,
three core principles, and they've really been.
They
the
didn't work hard for how many coaches? All of a sudden, they're going to work hard for Mac
had,
and Todd.
Absolutely.
Certainly not in the recent history,
okay.
But in the past history, there's always been a level.
The man played without a
helmet. Hard work, competitiveness that we very. Much want to see improved.
Jim and then Mark, Mac, you said you're stepping in now, but Todd's going to be taking over. Are you just that mean Todd's going to be the coach next year, or are you going to start another?
Well, Todd will be taking over currently.
Uh-huh.
And I will transition the team to Todd's control.
Yes.
Three games.
In the not too distant future. Transition
three.
The personnel. Then Todd will take over on an interim basis, interim head coaching basis from now to the end of the year.
He will coach
and,
about 50 games, and
be,
then I will fire him.
You know, assessed like every other coach based on the performance and the way that he can drive performance with this group.
Why? And in the crazy mixed-up world that it is, if he does well and costs him Connor McDavid, he'll be rewarded with the job.
Well, I think we can. Otherwise,
right.
We wouldn't be making this move right now. But at the same time, we understand the
does concerns. Does he mean like he has to do the job?
The,
is that what he's trying to say?
Open.
Yeah, he's
lay
Al
down
Snow.
And drop the belt?
He's Al Snow. That's what they should have hired.
A decision at the end of the year. I think that's... that philosophy and strategy is fairly clear in my mind.
Mark and then Derek? Yes. Clearly bigger.
Oh, thank God! Specs got
the
question.
Organization than things that Dallas could solve. His lineup just wasn't good enough due to the draft, due to the pro scouting, due to many things. How far does this go Does it stop with firing a head coach?
No. Everybody in the organization continues to be evaluated. My superiors are going to evaluate me. We'll evaluate our scouting staff.
But who watches the watchman?
Changes.
Evaluate the president.
The coaching issue would be
impeach the president.
Rooted than that, and we have to get to the core of it, and we will.
Derek and then Ryan, when it comes to the assistants that Dallas brought in, did they still around?
There's no other moves at this time to announce, and we go into Phoenix with the same.
Well, we're all about
consistency staff.
Behind the bench,
Ryan,
so we'll just fire the head coach.
The core group of players, they've been through a few coaches now, and you said the message from coach to coach was basically the same. I assume the message you'll be giving to them at your time there will
totally
be
different.
Similar.
Oh, what a
How much of this
question.
In your mind is on
this.
Those players to make significant changes in what they're doing?
Well, to me, it's 100% on the players to play the brand and of hockey that is necessary to win.
So
at this
the coach
level.
Doesn't matter,
and that level of execution
we'll fire
is
anyway.
Close, but it's not at a level that's allowing us to have any success whatsoever, and it's not leaps and bounds, but. There has to be some change in the mindset, some change in the work ethic and the competitiveness of the group for us to turn those one-goal losses into wins and try and turn this around in a fashion that we haven't been able to do so far. It's we've made a lot of changes. We haven't got any traction. So we continue to make changes and hope that. Some of this will get rooted, and then we'll start moving forward.
So, do you think that Dallas needed to be harder on this group and have more accountability?
Coach, I thought the accountability was fine. I thought Dallas was extremely supportive and tough on this group.
Saying? Why did you fire him then?
And as good a person
Volcano,
as I've
Greg.
Been in the game. And,
remember, Volcano.
I thought he did what he needed to do with this group.
We'll take a few more. Dean, Terry,
Volcano.
Mark. Craig, I wonder, did any of Dallas's recent coaching decisions come into this? You decided not to call a timeout the other day in that game.
The infamous timeout.
That's what sunk him.
Not at all. No.
Didn't call a timeout. You can fire him. Come on.
Had an impact in this. It was a decision solely based on the collective performance of the organization.
Then
in the hockey
Randy Carlyle league. Should have been fired after Game 7 against the Boston Bruins. He didn't call a timeout during the Bruins comeback.
Fire that guy.
Transition and who's taking over in OKC? And
Jerry's going to take over in OKC.
Oh, Jerry
gonna,
is, huh?
I'm not going to
What is the deal with OKC?
On,
I mean, it's a town that you
to the coaching
spell
staff.
Out with letters.
I'll leave at a reasonable time when I think Todd's completely familiar with the with the group and with the players, and he's done a terrific job in our minor league team in the American Hockey League. He's deserving of this opportunity. I want to help him transition this group, and as I said earlier, give myself a chance to get my hands on it.
We got three left here, Mark.
Jerry, by the way, is Jerry Fleming, who's the assistant coach of the Oklahoma City Barons.
I was really hoping it was
you
Jerry.
You just said here. Made a lot of changes. None of them have traction. Are you more
you would have liked it with Jerry Seinfeld, I know.
Well, that's
or Jerry Morrow.
That's
what is the deal with the neutral zone? Am I coming? Am I going?
Point. I don't want to answer that question until I get hands-on understanding of exactly what's happening in there. I've got a pretty good understanding of that, but I want to have ample opportunity to have eyeball-to-eyeball conversations with the core group.
All right, we've heard all this stuff before. All right, we can
pot
this
down. Yeah, blah. All right, enough of
this
stuff.
We did this one off the top. This stuff off the top. Right, cool. Thanks, Maddie.
By the way, in case you're wondering out there, and I know we were all wondering about this, how many one-goal games do you think Edmonton has participated in this year, Jeff Merrick?
Oh, good question. If you want to compare them to the 2007 Washington Capitals, I don't know. Mr. One Goal Game.
Of their 31 games, these, and if we can only turn around those one goal games, as McTavish said, then we're money. Mm-hmm. We're on our way. They have played 10 one goal games. Yeah, out of 31.
It's a 30 year games.
That's right. And they are 4-6, which is terrible. The 267 winning percentage puts them, where are they? They're towards the bottom of the league, I think. Just need to refresh. They're 29th. It's the 29th worst team in the league in one goal games. Yeah. But only 10 of their one-third of their games have been one-goal games. I mean, you compare that to a team like the Islanders, 15 games. Anaheim, 15 games. Nashville, 16 games. St. Louis, 14 games. All of these teams, by the way, are at the top of the the league in winning one-goal games. Yeah. But only 10 times have the Oilers been within a goal at the end of the game. Now, granted, yeah, there could be some empty net stuff that happened and what have you.
You know, I now that I think about it, what did you watch that game last night? Like, that was the worst effort. I mean, that the scoreboard was kind. That was the worst effort we've seen out of the Oilers.
You're saying that it's a that was the death knell kind of game, right?
It seemed like one of those, they're out of everything now. They've completely run out of gas.
By the way, shits and giggles. The top three teams as far as number of losses by three goals or more. Can you guess who they are?
Edmonton, Carolina, and New Jersey.
Buffalo with 10. They're 2-10 in three-goal games. Arizona with 9. Edmonton with 9. Arizona's 3-9. Edmonton is 2-9 in three-goal games. So they've lost by three goals 9 times.
Ooh, nice Ferris Bueller's reference there. That's very good.
Nine times.
Yep.
1-4 in two-goal games. They're just not very good, I think, is the assessment overall.
No, they're just not very good. But here's the thing. There's going to be more coaching firings. There's going to be more press conferences. There's going to be more hand-wringing because of the simple fact that Kevin Lowe let Steve Tambellini tear this thing apart. Mm. Fire all the coaches you want. There's still that hole of players they haven't replaced. And you know what? You know how I feel about scouts. They're some of my best friends, and I love that fraternity. But man, at this time, when the season's over, do you not have to finally say, you know what? Our scouting has been atrocious. Our skill development
has been atrocious.
No, I
think you definitely have to say that. You definitely have to say that. Here's the thing, though, with Edmonton, and it's the essential question that any coach who takes this job is going to have to answer. How do you turn around 0-16-1 when trailing after two periods? Furthermore, how do you turn around 0-10-2 when trailing after the first period? They've not won a game when trailing after the first period.
How do you turn around a bunch of kids that have won now, what, four or five battles against their coaches?
Now, hold on. That's not necessarily fair. They showed lack of effort for sure, but they all said that they all loved him, didn't they?
That's all public. Everyone says all the right things publicly.
Well, but they were saying behind closed doors, like Taylor Hall was trying to, advocate for him staying.
Bang the drum? But still, okay, so where are the results? Where's the effort? Where's the all of that?
Yeah, I know.
Like, honestly, you have a bunch of kids that are put in a position they should never have been placed in the first place, being rewarded for achieving nothing. And then when coaches got tough on them and there weren't results and the fan base was outraged, who went? The coaches. But the kids should never have been in that spot. Like, Hopkins, Eberle, and Hall should never have been put in the positions that they were in the first place. Mm-hmm. But why were they? Because the cupboard was bare.
Bear. Well, hopefully Speck joins us, but if not, it's okay. We've done a lot of Oilers stuff today. We have to get to other we've got some really other wonderful topics to get to today. The best
player.
Do
Vegas,
want
to do Chicago? You want to do
infected
the Mumps?
By the Mumps. And also we should probably mention.
By the way, if we're talking about the Mumps, everybody really needs to go read Sean Gentile at Sean Gentile. Did you see his updated lines for tonight?
No.
Left to right, measles, mumps, rubella. It's your first line. Ooh, I like the third line. Dysentery, cholera, and malaria is your third line. What have we got for defense pairings?
The DCM
line,
of course.
Ricketts and oh, hang on. Oh, hookworm and tetanus is a good one. Consumption and polio is your bottom six pairing. And smallpox was off the ice first, so smallpox starts tonight for your team.
If you want more mumps chuckles, me and Dave Lozo both wrote frequently asked questions about mumps on our respective sites today. Him, Bleacher Report, me, Puck Daddy, obviously. And real brief on Sid and the mumps, and I, you know, as long as we're recommending things to read, go to Seth Rohrabaugh's Twitter feed, but more to the point, go to his blog, Empty Netters, on the Post-Gazette website. The title of the post is Penguins Credibility in Question, and it is a fascinating read about the amount of outright deception the Penguins have used over the last several years about their players' injuries and about the ailments that they've had and using quotes to damn them and stuff. And it's really, really good. And there's something going on there. I don't, for the life of me, understand putting Crosby out like that, knowing what he looked like, and not expecting everything to hit the fan the way it did. As a guy who comes from public relations, it is a batshit dumb move to have done what they did.
I'm trying to find it here. You told me about this before the podcast, and I want to read it now. I can't find it.
That's good. Yeah, it's in this feed somewhere. He's a very active tweeter, so it's tough to say.
Is it?
But Malkin's injury. Malkin did not participate in any preseason games, did not attend any practices until a few days prior to the start of the regular season, October 9th. Since then, Malkin has participated in every game of the regular season. In 29 games, he has a team leading 36 points. His absence from training camp has never been fully revealed. And Malkin declined to discuss the nature of his injury when he spoke with the media for the first time this season, October 7th. Like, just really kind of weird handling of injuries in a very sort of deceptive obfuscation kind of way. It's a great read.
Does he go back to Crosby in the concussion versus neck situation?
He didn't, but I mean, that was also... I actually mentioned that to him in a message I sent him about the story. He touches on it, but like that,
because that costs jobs. That
mild concussion thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof. All right, I'm gonna read that right off the podcast.
Which
we'll probably never
read
end today, because we got a lot of stuff to talk about.
The Crosby stuff with the mumps is obviously, you know, as we know in the National Hockey League, when something happens to Sidney Crosby, wheels start turning. You know,
right.
shit gets in motion. The last time we saw Crosby significantly afflicted by something, they created an entire new department about it in the NHL. So,
okay, you want to rewind to me on Friday on this podcast? Idiot me saying, no way, there's no chance that he has mumps, because why would they let him out like that?
Oh, God, right?
But it makes sense. I'm saying to myself, no, there's no way he can't have mumps, because there's no way the Pittsburgh Penguins would do that. Well,
and because we're starting to get into the public panic portion of this outbreak. Now we learn that the Penguins visited a children's hospital, and that Bo Bennett was one of the players who visited, and now he has the mumps too. So now there's worry that, like, he, you know, sneezed
Bo
on
Bennett,
a kid,
yeah,
or shared a glass of apple juice with a kid.
Oh, Jesus!
So scary times. Moving on with more sunny information. Nathan Fenno is a reporter for the Los Angeles Times.
Oh my God!
Seated,
this is horrible.
In the hearing.
Oh, jeez.
About Slava Voynov, the prosecutor is stating the case about Voynov, and it is a hell of a thing.
So okay, do you
Redondo
remember?
Beach,
I was going to say, do you remember when this first all happened? And I came on the podcast, said I talked to someone close to the situation who said the pictures, if they're ever released, are devastating. Mm-hmm. Like the minute they saw them, like
the
there's
basis,
zero
the
doubt.
Basis The
oh,
basis
God.
For this quick action by the NHL was what was happening with Ray Rice and the fact that they felt that there was ample evidence that would come out eventually that would seriously damn Slava Voynov.
That's what I was
innocent
told.
Innocent or guilty.
If you see the pictures, there's no way that you could defend the man.
The police say Voynov's wife had a laceration over her left eye, blood streaming, red marks on her neck. They say that Voynov struck her in the face with his fist. They say that Voynov pushed his wife to the ground multiple times, kicked her repeatedly while on the ground, and choked her three times. They say Voynov pushed her into a flat-screen television where she cut her face. that she required 8 stitches to close the wound above her left eye. He says that they caught quick glimpses of photos of Voinoff's wife and that there was lots of blood. At their home, Jesus. The officers noted that there was blood all over the bedroom, including a comforter and a bloody handprint on the floor. And after that, he had to apologize because the judge offered to kick anyone using electronic devices out of the courtroom. Whoops. it is, and according to Fenno, recorded comments attributed to Voinoff's wife include her saying, "He kicked me here, and here he pushed me." It is just, A, depressing that this happened and that it affects a family, and B, just deplorable. I mean, the idea that this stuff's out there, the idea the Los Angeles Kings know that this is going to come out, don't even play like they don't know. Don't even pretend that they don't understand what's happened in this case and that they're waiting for it to come out in court. They've got their own people. They know what happened. They know what's going to be there. They know what's in the photos. The fact that they brought this guy back and played the, you know, "Oh, God, we didn't realize that he was practicing with his boys" card.
Mm-hmm.
They're just an embarrassment. The way they handle this thing is just a goddamn embarrassment, knowing what was going to happen when he finally went to trial for this. And it's just,
I don't know what to say about it. Honestly,
they got boo-boo-faced about the way the NHL handled it. And listen, we talked about this before on the show. The fact that the NHL had a different set of standards and rules for Varlamov versus Voinoff is a joke. You're either going to be all in on this or all out, and it shouldn't have taken the Ray Rice thing to all of a sudden change policy. But the idea that the LA Kings
But they did.
Yeah.
They changed policy. You can argue what the catalyst was and how, you know, it should have been done before, but they have.
Or you can make the argument that they didn't treat domestic violence with the importance that it deserves to be treated with Varlamov. Mm-hmm. But here, okay. It's like, well, the Kings did this thing, and they had every right to be upset with the league dicking around with his cap space. You know what I mean? Suspend him, fine. But you have to allow the team to be able to replace that salary slot. It makes no sense for the way that the team should not be penalized for the actions of their player. Right.
Yeah, I think I think the NHL never foresaw a circumstance like this.
Right.
And so, as much as they should have made allowances for the cap situation for the Kings, they had no mechanism to do so.
But if you're making it up as you go along anyway, like, just make that part up too. Use your brain. Use logic. It's not the Kings' fault that he did this. So why penalize the team? It makes no sense. That said, their little parlor games, or little reindeer games they've been playing with the NHL as far as Voinoff's availability, as far as his status, as far as sneaking him into practices and stuff. Come on. You guys are going to look like the biggest bunch of unfeeling, misogynistic assholes on the planet now when this stuff comes out. And it has, and now you do. So congratulations. I'm glad he got his reps in with his boys. Glad he got his reps in.
Nah, you know who will look awful? The team that tries to sign him. After all this.
You think it's going to be like that?
I hope not. Unless there's...
Because there's a lot of talk about Ray Rice not getting another gig in the league.
Is that right? Like, I don't know that sport as well as I know hockey. I don't know what the lay of the land is for Ray Rice. Are you going to land somewhere?
Of course, the difference between Voinoff and Ray Rice is that Ray Rice as an NFL running back was on beginning the decline of his career. Voinoff is not that player. Maybe you're right. Maybe he get, but no. Listen, if he gets charged with this, he's never playing hockey in North America again.
As awful as this is going to sound.
No. Go ahead.
We just saw Craig McTavish in a press conference. He spent a year in prison for a drunk driving incident.
Mm-hmm.
And he found employment again.
I know that. Joel Quenneville didn't go to prison, but he had a DUI right after he was canned by Colorado.
I forget. Did someone die?
Sequence of events was. No.
Because of McTavish's example, someone did.
No. But you and I both know that there are different levels of acceptance in our society. And I think at this point, for Slava Voynov or for anybody who beats the hell out of their wife, the door for employment will be closed for you. Because you know what? At the end of the day, there's not going to be protest signs when Craig McTavish gets hired to be the coach. There will be protest signs when Slava Voynov gets signed to be your defenseman.
Yep. Yep, there will.
And rightfully
but
so.
We've seen with sports before. Like, I don't know. I don't have that much faith, honestly. I've seen too many situations where, you know, where there's money, there's forgiveness. I'd like to think that it's not hockey, but I can't say that it is.
Yeah, no, I know.
I can't say for certain.
And this isn't a fourth liner we're talking about here either.
Look, dude, that's I brought the up thing. The example before on the last time we talked about Voynov, too. There's a statue to Bobby Hall outside the United Center. A fucking statue.
But isn't that the changing norms on domestic violence, too, though, that we're talking about when we talk about the Hall statue?
Just take down the statue.
Ooh. Let's get around to their racist team name first, okay, before we start taking statues.
Okay. All right. the judge, by the way, Rich Hammond tweeting moments ago, the judge has ordered there's enough evidence for Voynov to stand trial.
Okay. Obviously. Oh, God, what a terrible story. Scott Kruger writes in, if Voynov gets convicted of a felony, he'll probably be deported. You're probably right. And that, the end game for him career-wise here was always going to be the KHL, I thought. I thought the NHL door was closed.
Here's a question for you. Is the end game for Neil Yakupov, and by end game I mean next year, the KHL? He's coming out of his entry-level deal. It's not going to ring the bell. The numbers aren't there. Someone's going to offer him big bucks in the KHL, have the Oilers thrown away a first overall pick.
Oof. Might be right on that one, too. No, Jordan writes, and Danny Heatley killed his teammate and he's still in the league. Hard to believe Voynov's career would be over. Again, you're talking about, both you and Noah are talking about something vehicular. And I hate to say this, man, but there are different standards for different tragedies.
Danny Heatley wasn't drunk driving. Danny Heatley was a
speed
car accident involving speed. Now, you can say both are reckless, but I would argue, and I think all of us would, that one is more reckless than the other.
Isn't there a thought, though, in our society that if it's a vehicular manslaughter thing, okay, that the guilt that someone lives with, that they were a participant in that other person's demise,
it's punishment enough.
Punishment enough.
Yeah.
Like, I don't necessarily subscribe to that theory, but I think that is something that people believe.
I'm pretty sure that if I'm Danny Heatley, I'm thinking about Dan Snyder every day of my life.
Right.
And I'm thinking about his family, too.
I don't think that mechanism exists for a guy who pushes his wife's face into a flat-screen television. I don't know, man. This current climate, domestic violence, ample evidence, photos that'll probably hit the media at some point. I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you bring that guy back.
Hope not. I hope they don't.
But you know what's funny? We talk about this entire thing, right? The Kings would be the first team to bring him back.
Oh,
I think they,
man.
Don't you think? I mean, the way they've acted, like, you don't think they'd bring him back?
No, I don't. No.
Really?
I'd like to... Oh, shit. I don't know, man.
I
don't know.
He's Scott Gomez for them. He's basically practice without practicing for them, right?
Yeah, I wonder how much of that is the PA saying, hold on a second, he hasn't been convicted of anything.
Could be.
He can still practice away from the team, and you're just adhering to what's been laid out in the CBA.
Or it could just be them saying the heat's not on right now. Now it is.
I think more so it'd be a CBA thing than, oh, yeah, just go ahead, Slava, yeah, whatever. We all make mistakes when we have afternoon games and drink too much after. Go ahead.
Mm. Ugh. I feel like we need to have some Listerine after the show today.
Shower.
Right.
I didn't shower after the gym today, so I'm rank enough. I need to have a shower after this podcast
violence,
now.
Mumps, yeah. Domestic violence, and the Edmonton Oilers. That's a That's an acid bath that we need to take.
Let's talk about Vegas?
Let's end on a high note. Let's talk about Vegas. Now, what did we learn from Bill Foley over the weekend about this Vegas thing? Because he sat down with Elliot. Elliot got to go to Vegas for this?
Yeah, and then I saw him on Saturday at the shop. He had just flown back in. It was a quickie one for him.
Yeah.
But nice piece. Good get, right? Good get.
Great get.
Good get for Freege.
Did he look okay, though? Didn't you
want to see the wine cellar? When he opened that door and he said, hey, look, downstairs is the wine cellar. I know it was the framed autographed jersey from Wayne Gretzky with the Oilers and all that, but, I mean, I'm a wine guy. Greg, you're a wine guy. Didn't you want to see that cellar?
What Merrick is referring to, if you didn't see the clip, is that at one point, Bill Foley, the potential new owner for the Las Vegas NHL franchise, opens a false wall in his house.
He's Batman.
Like Batman, yeah. Like he pulled a book and all of a sudden there's a bat pole there. And Elliot makes reference to, this is your secret wine cellar.
Yeah.
And they just stop on the way down to look at this framed Gretzky jersey, which, I mean, everyone in Canada has already. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
But they don't go to the wine cellar. And you're just like,
no, I wanted
to. What are you doing? How do you not go down there? How do you not see it?
I'm gonna send a note to my exec and see if I can get the raw footage of that, just because I want to see that wine cellar, because that all had to be edited for 4 minutes of television, so there's a lot of raw footage from that still. I want to see that wine cellar.
What do you think about the interview? What do you think about him and what he's?
I'm shocked. Here's why I'm shocked. Why does Quebec not have a team?
They haven't relocated their one yet.
Well, I mean, what's the one thing that Gary doesn't like when negotiating with a certain area.
When local owners are a bit too hubristic about their intentions in getting a team.
Hubristic, wide open. What's the reason why did Winnipeg end up getting that team? I mean, that was until that final minute. That was a pretty cleverly guarded secret. Now, it sort of bust open when it looked like Phoenix was going to default and they were going to end up in Winnipeg. It was like, oh, Winnipeg's getting Phoenix. And it was like a matter of like 1 hour, they salvaged the deal in Arizona. But I'm thinking to myself, you know, the NHL likes Vegas because so far everyone's kept their mouth shut. We've been talking for about a year. We made a presentation 6 months ago. Everyone's nice and quiet about this. This is fantastic. And then boom, all of a sudden everybody knows about William Foley. And knows about the Gretzky jersey and the wine cellar, and they know what he wants to name the team. Like, if I'm the NHL, I'm not going like, oh man. And then he's going over the timeline of when he talked to the NHL after Gary Bettman has been saying for the past year, no, nothing to Vegas. Oh, it's ridiculous. I don't know what you're talking about. And then there's Bill Foley saying, well, the whole thing sort of began a year ago, and then about 6 months ago he made this presentation and they were happy about it. Meanwhile, you're Gary Bettman saying, I told everybody to shut up.
I think,
to dummy up.
I think his loose lips are an issue. I agree. He said more than any of us thought he'd say about the timeline, for sure.
Yeah.
That said, here's my theory on it. Okay? Theory is this. This is a completely endorsed media tour. Just like it's a completely endorsed season ticket drive.
Hang on, but is it a media? Is it a media tour? Like, who else has talked to Bill Foley?
Scott Burnside.
Oh, did Burnside talk to him? Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Burnside talked to him. Friedman talked to him. By the way, Friedge, if you're out there, I hope your shoulder's okay. Did you dislocate it volunteering to do the Vegas story? Raising your hand that quickly.
Yeah, it's funny because Friedge brings that up in the interview. He says, you know, everybody wants Las Vegas in the NHL because everybody wants the trip. But why do you think it can work?
Right. Exactly. So anyways, I think this is completely on the level. I think the NHL is in on all of this. And I've
cool
said from the start, because I felt the whole thing was real curious. Like, why go about it this way? I've said from the start, this whole thing about getting ahead on the Vegas expansion, relocation, whatever, this whole thing is a sell job for the other governors. The other governors who are worried about this being Arizona Part 2, the other governors that hear about, well, the stands will be filled with visiting fans who will market the product to, and hearing Florida Panthers Part 2. I think that there are people in this league that will no doubt be in lockstep with Gary on this at the end of the day, because he's frankly chosen most of them to be the owners. But I think there needs to be a bit of a sell for some people within the National Hockey League, below the commissioner's office, that may not necessarily be sold on Vegas. So you put Bill Foley out there as a hockey fan. Look, I have a secret wall with a Gretzky jersey. You have the market prove itself as viable with a season ticket drive. It's all bells and whistles. And I think at the end of the day, you are creating a case to convince owners that may be on the shelf and don't want – listen, Gary's done very few things that have upset the boys, okay? One of the things he did was Phoenix. The Phoenix thing was a situation where behind closed doors, owners were sniping and saying, look, you have to fix this. Or look, you have to beat Balsillie. Or why do we have to continue to prop up this franchise with our money? Because the one thing that the NHL on the players level had problems with.
Yeah.
But there were some. And you know this for a fact. The one thing that the NHL will always get knocked on by certain owners, and by that I mean certain very powerful owners like Jeff Molson, is revenue sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do not want another moribund, non-traditional market franchise in a desert sucking their money away, so they've got to prove that it's going to work.
Yes, they wanted the Phoenix problem to be solved. They wanted Jim Balsillie to go away. They were disappointed in what a fellow owner Jerry Moyes did in the first place. At the same time, they didn't want to kiss off expansion money. It's like they wanted Phoenix to go away, but they wanted Phoenix to go away by being a successful franchise. Can't you just get Jerry Reinsdorf in here to buy this whole thing, Gary, so we don't have to bleed anymore? And give it to Gary. Like I shouldn't say that, because who knows what's happening with this ownership group now. He has been able to keep the torches at the castle gate away when it comes to those owners. And none of those guys, like, you think Philadelphia, New York, Toronto, Montreal want any part of revenue sharing? Of course they don't. And during the lockout, you don't think people stand up in those meetings and say, I'm sick and tired of carrying your franchise. Why don't you stand up, put on your own pants, and handle your own affairs? Why do I need to prop you up? Those things happen all the time. But as far as that being a sell job, I don't think it's a sell job on the owners as much as I do. I think it's a sell job on the fans and the media. Guys like me who say that I'm not sure that hockey can work in Las Vegas. Like, if you're an owner, you know that marketplace. Like, by now, like, you've been talked to for a year, apparently, about the viability of Las Vegas, the pros, the cons, how much money can be made, how much is going directly into our pocket by way of expansion or relocation money, and what the long-term viability for success is. I think the sell job is on guys like you and me, people listening to this podcast, and the media who are writing the this-won't-slash-can't-work story. If it was contrived, that's who it's directed at. That's what I think. I think the owners.
We
the,
all agree, though, that
the owners know.
At the end of the day, this is all a lot of PR. Coming at us.
I do wonder, because I don't know Bill Foley. Like, I don't know how much he is a renegade who would go off script, and even though Gary doesn't want him to speak, he says, "Hey, yeah, hey, Elliot, yeah, I'll do an interview with you. Hey, Scotty, yeah, I'll do a piece with you as well." I don't know him. So I can't say whether this is according to NHL script or not. Although, you know what? He did come across as a charming guy.
That he did.
Right? He doesn't come in
once
as
again
hawkish owner, but
one again.
It's a good sell job.
Expansion to Las Vegas. Expansion to Seattle. Mm-hmm. Relocation to Quebec City.
Could
that
be.
Is my current prediction.
Could be. Tell you what. All right. At the same time, though, when the NHL expands by one, I don't think it'll just expand by one.
No, it has to be two.
I think it'll do it by twos.
I still think they want Quebec City as the back pocket city in case either Florida or Phoenix have to move.
Could be. Your theory made a lot of sense when you laid it out last week. Does make
Thank
a lot
you.
Of sense.
I think that it was
because
brilliant. It was brilliant.
Well, I mean, you know, not sure that, you know, splitting the atom was brilliant. You had an idea.
I've been listening to a lot of Serial, the podcast, and
I've heard this is awesome. I've heard this
really
is fantastic.
Fun.
I got to listen to
well,
this.
Well, it's losing it's the finale of it is Thursday, in which we imagine the host will finally lay out the case for or against the guilt of the protagonist, and or merely say we don't know and then have it just be a giant indictment of the Baltimore legal system. But the problem with the show now is that in the last episode, it's become a show about people who have heard about the show and now are like getting the memories jogged about a 15-year-old case going, oh, I remember this now. And it's like, oh, no, but you've now it's tainted. Everybody's tainted. But but the show has shown me that if you have a clear, logical path to a conclusion, that can be obviously the only conclusion.
Speaking of podcasts, by the way, if you're already a fan, you probably know this. If you're not a fan, check out, and it's a political one, so I know I come at this with a certain slant, but Dan Carlin's latest Common Sense podcast, Torturing Our Values, may be one of the best podcasts I've heard all year. No, you know what? It probably is. The comparison between American realism versus idealism is freaking brilliant, and no one presents it like Dan Carlin. Yeah, just went up yesterday, I think. Yeah, Torturing Our Values. Just listened to this morning. It's outstanding. You're a Dan Carlin guy? Have you listened to Dan Carlin at all?
No, I haven't heard of Dan Carlin. You
it's
heard
good.
That before, too.
Yeah, that and his Hardcore History podcast. The Hardcore History podcast is the juggernaut. I've always wanted to do something like that for hockey. I just don't have the hours, yo. But the Common Sense one is more regular, and that's a political podcast. I think you'd dig
and
it.
And please
I think
do you, download the way Junior. Jeff Merrick Junior Hockey podcast as well.
Where they've interviewed. Last week we interviewed Felix Potvin about his time in Chicoutimi. Speaking of Chicoutimi, we interviewed their current manager, Yannick Jean. Who else?
Do you mean Kemi from Pension Plan Puppets? Or oh, you mean the real Felix Potvin?
Right, the real Felix Potvin. We talked to Brad Robson, who was actually Brad Robson's cool. 5 minutes after he got fired, he called us and did the podcast. The former GM of the Lethbridge Hurricanes. Oh yeah, it was good. It was a good time. Troy Smith, the head coach of the Kitchener Rangers. Oh yeah, you'd love it. All that great CHL talk that you and Ryan Lambert love.
There's been a lot of talk about how I should start an NCAA hockey podcast to counter
you should.
Your podcast.
Dude, listen, I would be the first to listen to that podcast. If you and Lambert did a Div 1 podcast, I would be the first to subscribe. Get Chris Peters on it.
I would have to come up with a name. I would have to come up with a name that would counter Junior.
Div 1. Div 1.
Div 1. Ready Div 1.
Yeah.
I like that.
Lambert, Wyszynski, this is Div 1.
This is Div 1.
Better than Junior. This is Div 1. Celebrating all the kids that made the right choice.
I would love to hear me and Lambert on the podcast.
That would be great, man. Listen, I love Lambert's NCAA column on Puck Daddy. I think a Division 1 podcast weekly, you don't have to do it every day like a goof. Like we do this stupid little thing. Do it weekly, man. You and Lambert talking about college hockey? Frick yeah.
North Dakota no. is the tightest Andronicus of NCAA hockey, an unstoppable force of high quality.
It, as we all know, was Shakespeare's slasher play. There were blood and there was heads rolling all over the screen. You would swear it was a Craig McTavish press conference. It was in his slasher era. He was very young then. And by the way, we don't call it North Dakota. The hip folk call it Nodak.
Nodak. By the way, speaking of Nodak, they're going to be having, I think last week was the first hearing, public hearing on what the new name is going to be for their athletic teams. Yeah.
And are there any favorites?
I haven't heard any of the options yet, but I'm
have
I'm,
the please call them the Black Knights, just to piss off Vegas.
I would like actually them to change the name to the Fighting Sioux, S-U-E, and it's like a Rosie the Riveter kind of logo.
So the Fighting Sioux, it's a bunch of lawyers. Bunch of lawyers on skates, sticks and briefcases.
The Fighting Sioux? Yeah, why don't you just call them the Appeal then? I don't know. Listen. All right, listen. We need to go now. We're going to be back tomorrow to talk more about...
We got to go away.
About the hockeys. Karen Douglas probably happy that we did not get Speck today. We'll get Speck again, though. Don't worry.
We'll get Speck. Don't worry. He's a little busy today.
Yakov Mironov writes in, communications major would be an awesome NCAA podcast name. That's a very great name, actually.
That's a great name. Whoa.
New College writes in, it should just be college. Well, that'd be great, because then, like, the poster
like Junior
Lambert in our Belushi sweatshirts from Animal House, and then also that fake Eminem that did that song College. I forget what his name is, but he once referenced Alex Ovechkin in a song. It could be our nickname as well.
I like chicken wing sauce all over your shirt, sitting on the couch.
Mm-hmm.
Watching hockey.
Hockey.
College hockey.
College hockey.
College hockey. Oh, you know what? Our good buddy Patrick Gems, because he does use Photoshop Junior posters for me and Sam, which play off Junior with a very pregnant Jeff Merrick. I think you can probably expect a Div 1 poster coming up from Patrick for you and Lambert.
Nice.
They're good, too. Mm-hmm.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the show today. I know it was really uplifting.
Yeah,
And we hope that there'll be more uplift to come. By the way, one Puck Daddy announcement. Tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow on Puck Daddy begins the marathon 2014 year in hockey posts. Tomorrow, top 10 players of 2014. Kick it off strong.
That's
good. But Greg, what if somebody does something spectacular in the next two? Shut up. I think we probably know who the top 10 players are right now.
What if someone breaks Daryl Sittler's record? What if Ryan Johansson goes and breaks Daryl Sittler's record this week and gets 11 points?
Right. There you go. Well, you know what'll happen? He'll be traded to the Coyotes the following two seasons afterwards, like Kanye was.
That's right. The 8 points against Chicago. That's right.
There was probably some article written at that point that said that Sam Gagner was now untouchable because of having 8 points in a game.
He's finally arrived.
He's finally right.
It's another player they rushed, needlessly. God. You know what? In a lot of ways, people have made this reference on Twitter today, and it's bang on. The Oilers have become what the Maple Leafs were in the 80s. Draft kids high and rush them into the NHL.
Yeah. But on top of high picks.
But the
one thing that we didn't say, though, throughout this entire thing about the Oilers that it needs to be said, is it's not just drafting players high and rushing them into the NHL. It's not just allowing them to fester on a losing roster without getting them off that roster and maturing someplace else. It's paying them handsomely and lengthily. That's the issue as well.
It's one of them.
We talked before. How do you put the fear of God in these kids? You know, tell them they could be traded. Tell them they could be on the market. They have comfort on top of comfort with their contracts.
Money's
the same,
right?
None of them are scared.
So wait a minute. If I get traded, does that mean I get less money? No. Oh, okay.
What an amazing concept. The team has no compete level. Oh, they're all signed for 25 years at $6 million per? What an amazing coincidence. How could that be?
Yep.
What, they have no wherewithal to become better players and more well-rounded players because they're all signed long-term for millions upon millions of dollars? Are you saying that that's a thing that's happened in Edmonton? Well, I'll be damned.
Yeah, I know. And the thing is, here's the thing. You could drop Connor McDavid or Jack Eichel. There's still a lot of pain coming. Still more. You got 50 more games this year. Actually, 51. Sorry, sold you short a game. Actually, 51 more games to play. And that's going to bring you one more player that can step into the lineup. You still have your back end. You still have your goaltending. Have a look at the crop of free agents coming out.
If you had a way to put Taylor Hall, Connor McDavid, and Jordan Eberle on the same line, do you realize that could be the meh line? Could there be anything more apropos for the Edmonton Oilers?
Another loss. Meh.
All right. You see, we landed on a happy note.
Well, I've been making fun of Edmonton. Wow, okay. We're the only people in the hockey world doing that today.
Yeah. All right, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow for more fun and merriment. Bye.